Welcome to Crooners and Coffee Shops, everyone. My name is Heather. Today I have Rinda Laurel here to discuss her glorious career in the music industry and also her brand, Very Everyday. Rinda, we would love to hear a little bit about how you kind of got started in music and how your journey was navigating throughout the music industry.
Great. Thanks for having me today. And I'm starting off by saying I've had a full cold brew from Joshua Tree Coffee Company. I'm doing my shout out early in this. So I'm very excited to be here because I have already had my coffee. I grew up around a musical family, not really playing music, but everyone around me was listening to music. So as a really, at a really young age, I was very into music. And I landed my first job was actually just some friends that started a booking agency, and they used to book shows in the mid to late 80s, 86, 87, at all these great clubs around Southern California. And so I went to work for them, handing out flyers back in the day and working the night of the show with the artists. And that actually ended up leading into a full-time job in the music industry. Later, I got my first job at a record company in 1989, and I landed in the A&R department, which is the department that scouts talent. And once you sign talent, gets the record, develops a record with the artist. And so I've worked with artists ever since the mid 80s, and my career just went from there. I mean, the kind of like the good and the bad of the music business. Once you get in there, it keeps you in there. I went on to work in multiple record companies throughout the 90s and management companies. And I've worked in every area of the music business, like management and film and TV soundtracks and publishing. So it's been a very interesting ride for sure. And at one point I did a pivot. I've had multiple pivots in my career, which we'll talk about. But at one point, after doing indie rock and rock A&R for years and years, I ended up in the kids division of Sony, where I worked with some interesting kids projects, but with contemporary artists. And then I also ended up working with like Sesame Street and interesting brands. And then I pivoted once again and went into digital marketing in 2010. So I have been all over the map with music. I currently call myself a catalyst, and I work with a select number of artists, either management or marketing or as a representation of some sort to help them further their career. Wow, that was a lot in one breath.
Yeah, but you've had such an impressive career. And like, I mean, you've gotten the chance to dip your feet into so many different aspects of the music industry, and not a whole lot of people can say that. And like, I love that you said, you know, once you get into the music industry, you never leave. And, you know, it's kind of rare when you hear people that leave the music industry, you know?
Yeah, it happens. But then they end up doing real estate or something. But with all respect to my friends that actually have left the industry, I haven't. And I've been also really lucky in the sense that I've been able to work with all levels of artists. So artists that I found somewhere randomly and they're just starting out and they don't really have much going on, to like, you know, in my career, I'm not name dropping, this is just my life. So in my career, I've been able to work with everyone from like David Bowie to Public Enemy to Smashing Pumpkins, and my current artists that I've been working with for 8 years, the Afghan Whigs. I just signed a new artist. His name's Evan Williams. He's an actor. He's got a musical project called Bright World. And I've literally been able to just span all different types of artists. And I say that just because it's really great to see artists just keep going and just keep doing their music and just keep plugging away at it no matter what, you know, especially these days. It's not easy.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, like you've got so many awesome contacts and like you've been able to work with, you know, an array of different successes in regards to artists that you've been working with. And like, I kind of wanted to go back to what you had mentioned from switching from the, you know, the rock industry and going into children's music and such, because I mean, that I feel like that is a huge shift. And you don't you don't really hear a whole lot about how the children's music industry works. And like, I kind of wanted to ask your experience between not only the similarities and differences regarding working within those two industries, but also kind of like learning about the projects that you worked on as well more.
Yeah. So we have to definitely have to put this conversation in a time context, because the time that I worked directly for record companies was from 89 all throughout the 90s. And so this was like pre-digital. And then I moved into the kids space, I think in 98 through 2007. And so that it was also kind of pre-Napster. And so the kids business and all music business changed, you know, around 2007, 2008, within that context, you know. So it was different. It was, you know, the company that I worked for was pretty multifaceted. We did kids music, but we also did Sony Music Video. And so we worked with like interesting record labels like Shout Factory, which is like sort of a reissue label. And I worked on animated series. So like one of the things I got to do that was so fun was like do music supervision for an animated series. And so where this ties together, for example, is I went back to one of the artists that I worked at 5 years earlier called Letters to Cleo in the rock world. And I hired them to do all the music for Generation O, which was one of the kids division things that I worked on. And the other thing I got to do that was really, really fun is I had this crazy idea to do a guitar, like famous guitar players doing songs for their family. So again, I went back to my rock roots and I ended up working on this one record called Sing a Song with Six Strings, which you can still find some places. You know, it's got Slash, it's got Dean DeLeo from Stone Temple Pilots, it's got Kyle Cook from Matchbox 20, Vernon Reid from In Living Color, Peter Frampton. Like it's got all these amazing guitar players, Craig Ross, who plays with Lenny Kravitz, and Mark Ford, who played with the Black Crowes. And that was a really fun project because it was a family project, but I got to use my rock background to bring these people in. And so that was a really fun project. And then also during that time, like my most amazing experience I've ever had in my whole life is that I reached out to David Bowie's team to do a kids record with David Bowie. And this would have been 2000. And I ended up getting a meeting with David Bowie and like sitting in the room with David Bowie, which was one of the most incredible experiences ever. And I just have to share that like he was so kind and so amazing. And he actually at one point in the meeting asked me what my creative ideas were. And for a junior A&R person to have the king of creativity ask me that was an incredible experience. And I felt very respected. And it was pretty amazing. And so he ended up signing with Sony Music through that meeting, but we never got our kids record, but he did end up on Sony because of that meeting. So I always like to say I signed David Bowie. I hope I answered some of your questions, because it's like it was different, but it's like I brought who I was to the table within the kids division. You know, I did executive produce this 35th anniversary Sesame Street box set, and I made sure that bands like Los Lobos were represented and other artists that I had worked with in the past that I just loved. And so it really was a big crossover. And when my tenure at Sony Music was finished in about 2007, I didn't know what I wanted to do because I didn't really want to go back into rock. And I was kind of done with the music kids division and I didn't want to go into animation. And I had some friends who owned a digital marketing agency and they asked me to join them And so I did. I joined them and like left music for a couple of years and really got into understanding startups and, you know, digital marketing and digital campaigns. And, you know, I was really super early on a lot of the digital platforms. Like, and I moved into a completely different realm. And then to take it even a step further, in 2010, I moved to Paris and ended up doing international business development for a tech company for a couple of months. And, you know, talk about having a really different experience. That was pretty amazing. It was the beginning of like that part of social media and really understanding social media. And what happened was by 2011, I had learned so much about the tech space that the music business came calling me back. And I ended up speaking at MIDEM, which is an international music festival, and then South by Southwest. And then all these artists came back to me and said, you know, we actually, Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins was like, I want you to head up, you know, all digital for me. And at that time, that was a big, big, big job. And so I had him in the Afghan Whigs and Public Enemy as digital marketing all in 2012 and 2013.
Woo! That's so awesome to hear. And like, I mean, just the fact that you even got into, you know, the marketing side and like watching how this industry, multiple industries have been growing throughout the years. And like, I wanted to ask you, how important would you say that it is to have an open mind to learning all of these new skills within your career and then applying them to the numerous projects that have come forward?
I mean, for me, it's been pivotal. Tiny little things, for example, when I was a junior A&R person at Sony Music, no one wanted to learn this one program for data entry. And I was like, I'll learn it. Why not? You know, it's like the other girl was like too cool to learn it. And I was like, I'll learn it. And you know what? That kept my job at Sony for another 5 years because no one else learned it. And I ended up getting to go like to Europe for like all the people that learned this global archive system. And so I would just say, be open, like you never know what's going to happen. And I just, as a person, am very curious. I get bored if I'm, you know, doing the same thing for 25 years, I would not be able to do that. And so even though there's a through line in everything that I do, I think it's important to open up and to experience all these different opportunities that are out there. And so pivoting, which, you know, that word is ugh, but really it's like reinventing myself has just come naturally. But I think it's important to stay open to what opportunities are out there, especially for like people just starting out. You know, you can definitely focus on one thing that makes you really happy. If there's a certain area of the industry that really makes you happy, do it. If it's live, if it's public, whatever it is, do it. But always be open for new opportunities for growth is my opinion. And I live by it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely words of wisdom. And like, I even said the same thing or a similar thing to you. Like I am one of those people where I worked to try to learn all of these skills within the music industry, not only to build my resume when I was starting out and such, but also so that I know a little bit of each kind of market in a way. And I also learned a lot about myself and what I wanted to do. Like I thought that I wanted to be a music supervisor, and I learned that it kind of wasn't my thing, even though I love watching TV and all the TV. And, you know, I thought that I would be more into marketing, and just a lot of things changed within my life interest-wise. And I realized I love the live music industry. I love doing music journalism, which is what I went to college for. Always had the goal to start my own publication. And, you know, now I'm here with the podcast and talking to you about your career. And, you know, sometimes it takes longer to figure out your stuff and what you like and what your interests are. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I also think it's okay to like something and do it for a little while and then move on. It's like, I loved doing digital marketing and fan engagement when I first started in 2012. Now you can't hire me to do that anymore. Like, I don't love it. It's too complicated. There's way too many platforms now. I do it for one artist still because I've been working with them for so long. And they're not trying to embrace every single platform out there, but I don't love it anymore. People come to me to hire me for that still. And I'm like, nope. And even within the last year, I've really narrowed down what I like doing now compared to what I liked doing 5 years ago. So it's like, I enjoyed it. Now I don't. Now what I really love doing is taking in the music side of things anyway. And we'll get to my other business in a second, but and the music side of things, what I love doing is taking an artist and figuring out a different way to sort of co-create with them. So, you know, with Evan Williams and Bright World, it is full-time management and it's like co-creating his career because he already has an acting career, but he doesn't have a music career. So I'm going to help co-create with that. And like last year I worked with Jesse Dayton and who's already very active, has a fantastic career, but he's a great writer. And so I worked really hard to get him a book deal and we got it. And that's going to be out maybe this year or beginning of next. And so like really co-creating with artists is what I like to do in the music business now, and co-creating with like an event or other things I'm super interested, which is why I always like working with like Planet LA and Ali Shaw and Manic Monkey and Mark, because they're always doing something interesting that I can help co-create. So really like co-creation and being a catalyst is what I like to do now. And I'm glad that, you know, it might change next month. I might decide, or not next month, but next year I might decide that I want to do something different, and that's okay too. Like we're allowed to change and grow and change our minds and also evolve.
Absolutely. And I like that you bring is not a word anybody.
Bring is
clearly I bring it. It has been brought in. but I like that you brought up the fact that, like, you know, even this year you kind of had some changes in regards to what your interests were. And like, I feel like a lot of people with the pandemic also had some changes within what keeps them passionate and what is keeping them interested. And there's so many people that took up a bunch of different skill sets. Like, I have a few people that straight up quit their jobs and are now doing some online school for, gosh, like computer tech, a bunch of these other kind of skills, because that's what they really like to do. And, you know, time is of the essence. And, you know, life is too short to not want to pursue the things that you want to do, whether it turns into a lifelong career or it just ends up being a hobby. But I feel like we're easily just like dug into with this idea of like, you have to be successful in one thing and you have to be good at it for the rest of your life. And I love that times are changing now.
Yeah, I think that's sort of a archaic thought process that's just a residue from, you know, capitalism. But and like patriarchal society. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, I was on a panel yesterday for Indie Week, which is a Canadian for musicians. And they had a panel with 30 women that were sharing their stories really briefly. And each one of them, what I found fascinating is each one of them had multiple projects going on and they had multiple things that they wanted to do. And they were working on all of them. And I think that's also great too. There again, if there's one thing that you're super passionate about and that's all you want to do, go for it. You know, I think everybody had to go into a little bit of a cocoon last year, clearly. And I think people are, you know, going to rebirth as butterflies here pretty soon.
Yes, absolutely. And kind of going into your other business, Very Everyday, apart from your passion in the music industry, you also have a passion for raising awareness on mental health and emotional wellness, which is so incredibly important, especially now. And we would love to hear about how the inspiration for Very Everyday kind of came to be.
Yeah, definitely. Let's roll back because again, and I'm just realizing this in speaking to you, which is really wonderful. That's one of the reasons why I love doing podcasts is like, it's almost, I get my own inspiration as well, is, you know, if you roll back into the 90s, when I was in the music industry, it was definitely a place that allowed you to have, you know, I was drinking a lot. I was doing a lot of drugs. And that kind of, especially in the 90s, you were definitely allowed to do that a little bit more than you are now. I think people are really starting to understand the difference. The party life is just different now, which is great. So anyway, flashback to the early 90s, and I was drinking and using a lot of drugs, and I hit an emotional and physical bottom, and I got clean and sober through 12-step programs and abstinence-based recovery. And I've been sober now for 28 and a half years. So since July.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Since that's such a huge accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. So July of 92 is when I got sober. And I was really lucky in that when I went on this sobriety journey, I ended up surrounding myself with a lot of people in the music industry in Southern California that were also on the sobriety journey. So I hung out with a lot of bands that were sober, and I ended up managing a couple of bands, one of them being Cadillac Tramps, which were all sober. I found a little niche of people in my A&R group that were, you know, in my music industry that were sober, because you remember I was going out and seeing bands every night for the first 10 years of my sobriety. So imagine going to bars and not drinking. It's possible. And then I also had this great, fabulous music business life that was happening, and I was working on my recovery, but I was still struggling with depression behind the scenes. Like I was pretty good at hiding it. And, you know, that's why a lot of times when celebrities die, people are like, but we didn't know because they had such a great life. And you're like, yeah, you can have on the outside, on the surface, you can have a lot going on and still be struggling really a lot with depression and anxiety. And that's what was happening with me. And so I was on this constant journey of trying to get better, you know, get better in all spaces. And went on medication, and that helped for a little while, and then did tons of research. And what happened was I ended up getting off all medication. And again, I'm not anti-medication, but for me, it was time for me to get off medication. I got off all medication and I made some lifestyle changes, and I learned about biochemistry and like what was going on internally in my body with my neurotransmitters to do with mood. So dopamine, serotonin, GABA, these neurotransmitters in your body that help regulate mood. And so I did a deep dive on all of that. And I was able to come out the other side of all of that using natural remedies, and have been clinical depression free for 5 years now. And when I say clinical depression, what I mean is like I was, you know, couldn't get out of bed depressed. And I haven't had that type of depression even through the pandemic for about 5 years. And one of the things I did was supplementation. And so I decided to launch my own company using the formulas that helped me to help other people. And so I launched with 5 formulas that help boost and support the main neurotransmitters having to do with mood. And that is how Very Every Day was launched. I launched that in 2018, and I've been an outspoken mental health and recovery advocate ever since.
And we absolutely appreciate, you know, people like you that are willing to share your story of how you struggled and came out of it, and also what you wanted to pursue regarding how to help others and such, because not a whole lot of people, unfortunately, get that chance, and they depart this world, and kind of like what you mentioned about celebrities, like, oh, but they looked so happy. And it's like, but you really don't understand how someone's mind is unless you really understand what's going on in their life. And when it comes to things that cause depression or anxiety, it's still almost kind of a taboo topic to discuss. At least that's how I feel, even though a lot of change has been coming about from it and people being open with their stories, especially during this pandemic. My gosh. But we appreciate you. We appreciate Very Every Day. And you've even received a few high remarks from musicians regarding their use of your supplements. And I wanted to ask you, how important do you feel it is for those who have the platform, or anyone really that's, you know, on social media or willing to discuss these topics, to use their voices to share these types of experience in order to normalize mental health discussion?
Yeah, thank you. I think it's really important. I think a couple things have happened. I think in 2017, 2018, we had a series of suicides that really shook people up. Robin Williams, Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade in that spectrum. And then Chris Cornell, I think, just rocked all of us, because we did not expect that. Chris Cornell from Soundgarden, and then Chester Bennington from Linkin Park. You know, I had experienced a lot of it, either accidental overdoses from friends in the 90s, or, you know, the suicide of Kurt Cobain. And like, I think that the conversation shifted when Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade and then Chris Cornell, I think the conversation shifted and people started talking about it more. And, you know, mental health became a part of the conversation. And people were starting to willingly look at smashing the stigma of mental health. And it was in that, I think that was around 2018. And then by 2020, like, everybody, no matter what, you know, where you are on the mental health and mental illness spectrum, everybody had a really hard time. And there were so many people talking about it. And I think that that really also helped catapult this conversation into an even bigger arena. And same with recovery and sobriety. There's a big sobriety movement and multiple pathways where it like went from like 12 step, which was like anonymous because it had to be in the 30s because of the stigma, to this big movement of like sober curious and people that are just really, there's a huge sobriety movement about recovering out loud and smashing the stigma on all of those. And I think it's incredible. And I'm really happy that that's happening, because you know, the less out of the shadows it becomes, the more we can address it. And I do have a handful of quite a few artists, because that was your original question of like artists that are using my supplements, and then other people, other mental health advocates that are using my supplements, and that are just out there and talking about mental health. And I think it's important for people to keep sharing their stories so that the person that still feels any kind of shame or any kind of struggle will reach out and get help. The other thing that I would say, I don't even think I told you this yet, is, you know, I just recently joined the advisory board for Backline. And if you go to backline.care, it is support for the music industry, mental health support, mental health and wellness, which is one of the reasons why I gravitated towards them, is they embrace both. And they help musicians and their families and anyone who's in the music industry. If they're struggling with mental health, you can get therapy, and they have groups, and they have like special wellness. People that are partners, like Very Every Day is a partner, of course, but I'm also on the board because it's such an important conversation to have. And, you know, musicians and the artists, we're going to be the storytellers. I know that there are other entertainment industries that are also going to be storytellers, but I think having us out there talking about mental health and being open and honest about it is going to be the best thing that we can possibly do. And we have to take care of our own mental health in order to do that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And thank you for sharing backline.care. If anybody is struggling, this is a really good, you know, platform to discuss this. And I'm taking a look at the website now, actually. And like, I really like what is going on with this organization. So I'll make sure to have this linked in our post and in the podcast description as well, for anyone who is struggling that just so happens to be in the music industry. But yeah, it's funny that you bring up the surge in sobriety within the industry, and just like influencers and such, just people going on social media and discussing it and being open with it, because I feel like for the longest time, people admitting that they were getting sober was like, oh, you hit rock bottom. And it's like, well, you don't necessarily have to hit rock bottom in order to want to get sober. Like, maybe you realize that it has not been that great for your health in general. You know, we understand that alcohol has a lot of carbs. Nutritional wise, once you get rid of it, there's a huge difference. And that's like one of the easy things that you can do. But, you know, I love that people are being open and it's and being like, I'm sober now. Like, this is how many months I've been sober. And the more that we're open about it, I feel like the younger generations are going to be more open with their struggles.
So here's what I find interesting. To me, what you're talking about is where the sobriety movement and the wellness movement are colliding in a good way, which is this, I'm sober because I feel more healthy. And I really love that. I think it's amazing. But then there are those of us that are sober because if we didn't get sober, we would probably be dead. And so you don't have to hit the kind of bottoms that I hit or that other people have hit. And you just, it's really about like understanding yourself and knowing yourself. And if it is sobriety because of wellness, that's amazing too, because, you know, alcohol is a depressant. So a lot of people use it and then they wonder why they're depressed. Or it's also, people use it to calm anxiety and depression, but again, it's like has the opposite effect in the long run. So using other wellness methods to cope with some of those things is really important. And of course, that's where my supplements come in. And then also, you know, any other kind of wellness modality of meditation and exercise for sure. And if you are suffering from like trauma or deep depressions, then, you know, talk to somebody and get some help. So there's just these varying levels that everybody has to sort of like figure out kind of where they're at and then just go for it and, you know, accept where you are and go to the next step to make sure that you're living the best life that you possibly can is like the only advice I can give, because it's the spectrum of recovery and mental health and your career and all of it. There's just all these varying levels. And so if every day you can just, you know, I'm gonna say one thing. I'll close this section with saying one thing. My grandma, who's 94 now, said something to me a couple years ago, and I love it. It's like, we can't compare ourselves to anyone else. We can only compare ourselves to ourselves. And in this case, what I would say is like that includes your career, that includes your mental health, and that includes your wellness and your well-being and who you are as a person. So like if you're waking up and you're okay and you're comparing yourself to your past self and you're moving forward, then you're doing something right.
Words of wisdom from Granny. Listen to your grandparents. Listen to your elders, everyone. They have some really good advice. And you might not understand it now, but one day you will, and it will stick with you.
Definitely.
Yeah. And to kind of end off the interview portion, I wanted to ask you, what other big exciting things do you have in regards to business endeavors or career endeavors that we should be looking forward to?
Well, let's see. So I'm going to be working hard on getting the message out for Vary every day. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So we're going to be doing some initiatives there on education. I'm trying to gather some teammates around me so it's not just me working on Vary, and so I can get some more messaging out there for education on the biochemical part of mental health. So that I'm really excited on getting that going. I'll be speaking at a couple of different events in May for mental health awareness. So that you can find on my website, which I'm sure you'll link to, or Vary every day. I always, when it's mental health based, I always put stuff up there and post about it. I have Evan Williams, who is an amazing actor. He was in Versailles and Awkward, and he just had a top 10 Netflix film called Midnight at the Magnolia, and he's going to be putting out his first single in May under the name Bright World, which is his musical project. It's called Bright World, which I just love the name of that. That's happening in May. And I've got some other behind-the-scenes artist stuff that I'm working on. And yeah, I think that's about it. I'm just going to enjoy the weather in Joshua Tree for the next couple weeks before it gets gruelingly hot here. And that's what we got going on for the next month or so.
Awesome. And where can everyone find Very Every Day and also your other consulting projects and such online?
Yeah, it's pretty simple as far as Very Every Day. It is spelled VRY. I got a little, artsy with it. VRY Every Day is the website, and it's also all the socials. So that's where you can find all information there. If anybody listening is struggling with any that has questions about mental health and how Very can help, there's a link. You can email me through that link and I'll try and help. I do consulting there where I do like a one-off with someone and like guide them on, what supplements they're taking and like what they should have their doctor test them for and other things like that. So I do offer consulting there. Yeah. And then my website is @Rynda, @RYNDA. And that I just kind of update stuff that's going on there. And my social is @Rynda. I've had that social forever. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Lots of amazing resources. And, if people want to learn a little bit more about your amazing career at Rynda.
I've had the @Rynda Twitter since, 2008. And I have a necklace that's the @ and the Rynda. And so a friend of mine, Hisham, it was always like, "Hey, @Rynda." And so when I wanted to find a name for my company, everybody just knows me as my name. So I was like, I just need to call it @Rynda because it's just funny. So
it's awesome branding. Great marketing.
Yeah. I'm like, marketing or is this narcissistic? It's not meant to be narcissistic. It's really truly meant because everybody would always ask me what company. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's just me.
I mean, it's easy to remember. And, all of us have like little attention spans now. So the easier, the better. It worked out.
Yes.
Yeah. And to kind of get into our coffee shop appreciation portion here at Crooners and Coffee Shops, we love our coffee. And shout out to Joshua Tree Coffee that you mentioned earlier with your cold brew. I didn't really have time to get to a coffee shop today because we're getting our solar installed. But I want to shout out my favorite Folgers roast, the Black Silk. I have to drink through all of it so I can reuse the container for composting in my kitchen.
Perfect.
Rynda, would you like to shout out a coffee shop or do you have any fun coffee stories that you would like to share with us?
Sure. Okay. A couple things. Yes. Joshua Tree Coffee Company here is amazing. They ship their coffee all over the place. They make it here. I do love their cold brew. It's just, I am a cold brew person. As far as bottled cold brew that's out there in the world, I really love Chameleon. It's just the smoothest. And here's a hot tip. I take Chameleon cold brew vanilla and I mix it with coconut water. And therefore you get, it's like cooling, especially in the summer, and it's cooling and the coconut water is hydrating and caffeine can be dehydrating. So you want to hydrate. So the combination of a good coconut water and a good cold brew is amazing. I've been making my own cold brew with a Toddy coffee maker for, probably about 15 years now. And the funny thing is, like, whenever I'm a house guest at some place somewhere and I leave, if they don't have a Toddy coffee maker, I'll send them one. I've sent a handful of Toddy coffee makers to my friends over the years after I stay at their house.
That's such a fun, like, little gift that I have to get myself a little Toddy cold brew. So,
yeah, it's really, I like the non-acidity of it. And I like me some cold brew.
Yes, especially during the summer. Summer's almost here, everyone.
Right.
Right. All right, Rynda, @Rynda.
@Rynda, @Very Every Day.
Oh my goodness. I love it. Thank you for joining us today. It was awesome getting to chat with you, learning about, you know, your illustrious music industry career and, you know, very every day, the importance of mental health awareness. And, you know, we wish you all the best of health and success and hope you have a fun rest of your stay in Joshua Tree.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And to our listeners, stay safe out there, everyone, and stay caffeinated.